Chapter 3. All the pictures I'd ever seen of Native American villages showed them laid out in neat rows or in a carefully organized semicircle of identical domed bark wigwams or teepees. Usually they depicted a few women working in what seemed to be a common area, each one engaged in a demonstrative chore like weaving or doing something to corn. There would be a few mostly naked children running around, at least one woman with a baby strapped to her back, and at least one scruffy-looking dog. There were always trees in the background. The village we stepped into was a lot less like a carefully organized little group, and a lot more like a disorganized suburb. Long wigwams shaped like L's or T's dotted the landscape at random, with tiny gardens laid out in careful rows in the bends of the houses, and most of the wigwams had what looked like in-ground barbecue pits dug in front of them. Most interestingly, wagons and carts with wooden wheels sat by the doors of the wigwams. There weren't any fences to mark the boundaries between the yards and common areas, but the winding wheel ruts in the dirt showed where the public pathways were. Wooden pens here and there held small flocks of gleaming black turkeys, and skinny brown dogs with pointed ears and whip-thin tails ran around or sat and panted here and there. Most of the people we saw were sitting outside their front doors or by their barbecue pits with clay cups and bowls in their hands. They had the same complexion, hair, and eyes as Auntie and the boys, although quite a few of them were a little darker and more coppery. They all seemed to be wearing a mixture of the buckskin clothes and floral beaded patterns that I'd seen in the Detroit Historical Museum, representing the Ojibwa and Potawatomi, and the flowing white tunics, striped ponchos, and angular geometric patterns that I saw on ancient Aztecs in the murals down in Mexican Town. Nearly all of them seemed tired and listless, and after a few seconds I realized something else that was strange about the population. None of the men or boys I saw seemed to be much older than the teenagers who had found us in the woods, and there were barely any children under the age of 10 or so.
"I don't see any grown men at all,"
Emma whispered to me as we approached the cluster of wigwams through the scattered trees.
"If they killed all the men, the occupation must not have happened very long ago."
"Yeah, I'm thinking 10 to 15 years," I whispered back. "And look, they have wheels."
"Is that notable?"
Emma asked. "Native Americans never got around to inventing the wheel, except for some Mayans who just used them for children's toys," I explained. "The Aztecs must have figured it out, or maybe they stole it off the Mayans, and the invention of the wheel combined with their war bison helped them spread their empire all the way north to Michigan."
"Hey-ya! Everyone, wake up!"
Auntie Chickadee set down her basket and started to clap her hands.
"This is not just another day that we break our backs in the fields. Black Turtle and his hunting band have brought us something great."
"Wait, wait, we can't let the chief know."
White Cloud tugged on Auntie Chickadee's poncho.
"She'll tell the Eagle Lord." "Bear Bear, go distract Red Squirrel,"
Black Turtle said to his pudgy friend.
"She's your mother's sister. If you tell her that you need her for something, she'll listen to you." "But what should I tell her?"
Little Bear squeaked.
"If I say I'm hurt or sick, she'll send me to Auntie Chickadee. And if I had a bad dream, she'll send me to Grandfather Day."
"Tell her."
Black Turtle furrowed his brow in thought for a second, and then his face cleared.
Tell her that you saw someone coming from the south, a band of warriors." "No, she'll tell the Eagle Lord and he'll send his troops,"
Little Fox said.
"Tell her it was a wanderer in rags, and that he was speaking to the spirits as he walked, and that he walked off of the road and into the forest. Tell her he walked off on the west side of the trail, so that if she searches, she does not find the house that the spirits came in. And tell her that he had a spear, so that she has to put on her armor and take her weapons before she goes." "A crazy wanderer with a spear from the south going west. Got it."
Little Bear took off at a dead run into the warren of twisting paths and wigwams and quickly disappeared.
"Hey-ya! Hey-ya!"
Auntie Chickadee clapped with renewed fervor.
"Why are you all still yawning with such sour faces? Don't you know that there are great things happening here?"
"Stop telling us to wake up if you're not going to tell us what you want us alert for,"
yawned another old lady.
"Don't you know that the spirits are among us?"
Auntie Chickadee pointed to me and my little gang of ladies.
"Or has the light of the Sun Eagle blinded your eyes so that you cannot see?"
"What would you call a being like me?"
Phyla stepped into the light, lashed her tail, and wiggled her tufted ears. She smiled the friendliest smile I'd ever seen on her gorgeous face, but her fangs gave her face a predatory look no matter how innocent and welcoming her expression was.
Underwater Panther Woman!
The gasps that came from the collected crowd of people sounded more scared than impressed, and there were a few muffled-sounded screams. Some of the women dropped their bowls or cups, grabbed their smaller children, and started to hustle them back inside their wigwams.
"Wait! She does not mean you any harm!" Black Turtle shouted. "She protects the lake, and she has come along with the Thunderbird. They have stopped their eternal struggle to come to our village and speak to us!"
"Excuse me, but that would be Thunderbird Woman."
Emma stepped forward and raised her hands. Her eyes glowed, her hair floated, and a familiar blue glow started to form around the tips of her fingers.
"Is there anyone here who would like a demonstration of the thunder in question?"
Murmurs started to come from the crowd, followed by a few cautious whoops and cheers.
"Bring the storm, Thunderbird Woman!"
a creaky old voice shouted.
"I am so sorry, Honored One."
Auntie Chickadee turned to Emma.
"My people are usually more respectful than this toward our spirits.
I have learned you believe we have surrendered to the gods of the sacrificers,"
Emma said. She pointed at a barbecue pit, and the tip of her finger started to glow bright blue.
"I can understand why you would lose faith, and I do not blame any of you for it. But we are here to show you that we still walk among you."
A bright blue bolt of lightning sizzled from the tip of Emma's index finger to the barbecue pit. The bolt of lightning struck the barbecue pit, repeated the action a few times, and then disappeared with a deep zapping sound. Orange flame started to lick up from the center of the barbecue pit. Now the gasps and murmuring from the crowd sounded more impressed, and a few people began to clap in rhythm. The applause gained volume, and a low chant swelled from the voices.
"Thunderbird! Thunderbird! Thunderbird!"
Emma stepped forward, took a deep curtsy, and waved at the gathering crowd of people who'd abandoned their breakfasts to come greet the spirits. Her face glowed, and not just with her electrical powers.
"Hello, everyone! The Underwater Panther Woman and I have set aside our differences for the moment to come visit you all. And we've even brought some other friends from the spirit world, so please do welcome them as well."
"Hi, I'm Dave," I waved at the crowd of copper-colored faces. We're all here from another world to check up on you and just see how you're doing and everything. We're only here for a few days, but we're really looking forward to seeing your village."
"Thunderbird! Thunderbird! Thunderbird!"
The chant grew louder as more people surrounded us.
"The spirits have traveled a long way, people,"
Auntie Chickadee shouted as she clapped.
"Show them your best and make them welcome."
Someone brought us blankets and furs to sit on, and a few people pushed clay cups of an herbal, lemony drink into our hands. A few of the younger boys dragged big drums out of their wigwams and started to beat on them while women danced in a circle around us. A bunch of little girls gathered in front of us and began to sing a song about the Thunderbird's wings, and a giggling trio of teenage girls laid garlands of little white flowers on our heads and around Floppy's tusks and trunk. Some of the mothers and grannies ducked into their wigwams, and I wondered if the excitement was too much for them, but then they started to bring out bowls and platters full of food. Before long, the striped blanket before us was filled with food. There were platters of warm fried bread that crunched into soft, salty clouds in my mouth, bowls of spicy bean and corn soup, crunchy roasted nuts, and plates of wild rice stained purple with sweetly tart berries. There were also small covered pots with pieces of smoky, gamey meat jerky, savory meat stews with green peas and pieces of potato, and dumplings filled with minced meat and fragrant herbs. I tried some of every dish the villagers had to offer, but once I'd gotten a few good servings of animal protein in me, I tried to push most of the meat dishes toward Phila and Acrasis. I could supplement my protein needs just fine with nuts and legumes, but I knew that Phila needed meat to survive, and I was pretty sure that just looking like a human wouldn't allow Acrasis to digest food like one. I kept an eye on Acrasis to see how she was faring with the human food, but she popped pieces of jerky and chunks of stew into her mouth just like the rest of us. I was happy to see that Emma was mobbed by people who wanted to talk to her, and that she was nodding and chatting away.
We grow and keep what we can, but we're not used to farming on this land,
one of the old grannies said as she removed the cover of a dish of meat stew.
We always came down here to hunt, but now the Eagle Lord keeps all of the game for himself and his warriors.
Well, this meat is really good. I sampled a piece, then held out the bowl to Acrasis. The savory chunk of meat fell apart in my mouth and released its juices down my throat. Hmm, what is it?
Oh, it's whatever the women who do man things or the boys brought home.
The old granny nodded at a salt and pepper-haired woman who wore a pair of leather breeches and a vest.
We don't ask what it is or where it came from.
Women who do man things?
Acrasis asked, as she licked a drop of brown soup broth from her fingers.
Do your people divide labor by sex?
Women garden, men hunt,
the granny said. She settled herself down next to our blanket, nabbed a piece of jerky from the pot, and shoved it into the hollow of her cheek.
Unless they're better at the other. Someone's got to do the work, and that's how we've always done it. Maybe the spirits do their work differently, or maybe you don't have to work at all. But when the sacrificers came and slaughtered all our men, the women who do man things kept all of the men's knowledge. They teach it to our sons. Although sometimes I think the boys do not listen to the most important parts.
It is very wise to keep knowledge,
Emma said. She brushed fried breadcrumbs from her face and patted her lips with a handkerchief.
Do you write your knowledge down at all? It might be handy to keep a written record of things, just in case people die before they're able to pass on their wisdom to the next person.
What, like the sacrificers do? With their little pictures that you have to know the meaning of already to understand?
The old woman pressed her lips together, then she tilted her head to the side.
But then you would just have to teach people how to understand the pictures, and if they don't understand them, the meaning is lost anyway.
But all you need to do is learn how to read the pictographs,
Emma said.
And then you'll be able to learn anything that's written down in it.
We have always taught from doing,
the old woman said. She chewed on the piece of meat in her mouth for a few seconds, and then her cheeks bulged out as she moved the jerky back.
But the spirits are wise. You have a way of writing to give us, Thunderbird Woman?
The one I use is a little too complex to teach you in the time we're here, unfortunately. But I'd suggest that you start by thinking about the sounds you use when you speak, and finding symbols to represent those sounds. That way, you don't have to memorize a picture for absolutely everything. Just 20 to 30 different shapes that you can put together to write down anything you might have to say.
Your words are wise,
the old woman said. She got up and bowed to us.
I will think deeply on what you say. If things go as they have been going, keeping a written record of our stories may be the only way that our people are ever remembered.
I swallowed one last mouthful of buried rice and then pushed the plate away. It occurred to me that these people didn't have much food for themselves if they had to give most of it to the occupying Aztecs, and they had probably been carefully rationing their poached meat. My stomach appreciated the delicious, nutritious food, but I told myself that I shouldn't stuff myself anyway, since I didn't know when I'd need to be light on my feet. Eventually, the drumming and singing died down, and the people of the village started to crowd around us again. This time, the murmurs and whispers seemed more worried and anticipatory than curious and excited.
Spirits, you have come to visit us at a time of great hardship,
one of the middle-aged women said. Her hair was glossy and black, but the lines around her face spoke of stress and worry.
It has been nearly 11 summers since the sacrificers came to our lands. They killed all of the men who would not join their army, and we fear for the lives of our sons when they come of age. They sacrifice us to their cruel Sun Eagle whenever they please, and our numbers grow smaller every season. They take so much of the food we grow and the turkeys we raise that we can only feed ourselves if we hide our stores. And they cut off our hands and leave us to bleed to death in the forest if they catch us hunting. We are trying to keep ourselves alive, honored spirits, but we are afraid that our people will perish under the rule of the sacrificers. We do not ask for timely rains, a fruitful harvest, or good hunting. All we ask is for the wisdom that will help our people survive.
Now everyone was truly silent, and I realized that the people of the village were waiting for an answer from their gods. They weren't just going to give us a feast and dance for us and show us a good time. They needed our help, and I had absolutely no answers for them.
What should we tell them?
Acrasis's voice echoed inside my mind, and I realized that she was gripping my hand. The disguised slime girl gazed stoically at the crowd as she spoke to me telepathically.
We have observed the social behavior of many types of beings over the years, and we do not believe that this group of humans is likely to survive if these conditions continue. The invaders are clearly trying to eradicate them entirely, and we cannot calculate any course of action that will lead to their survival in this world in the 3 days that we will spend here.
I got nothing, I mentally replied. I glanced over at Emma to see if she was having any better luck thinking of wisdom to offer the villagers. I definitely didn't begrudge Emma her moment in the sun as the Thunderbird woman, since I figured she'd know a lot more about survival as a small band against a hostile world than I would. I thought I'd had it rough having to do gig grocery deliveries to pay my rent in my homeworld, and I was still just learning to fight for my life. But Emma had been surviving against the odds in a hostile world her entire life. I figured that if anyone would have something useful to tell the villagers, it would be her.
You have been through great hardship indeed,
murmured Emma. She tucked a loose strand of obsidian hair behind her ear and glanced at me.
Of course the spirits have heard your cries of pain, and it isn't a coincidence that we're here.
Then are you here to help us rise up and fight against the sacrificers?
A voice called from the crowd. The woman in the leather breeches and vest stepped forward.
We may have lost many of our numbers, but we are all willing to follow the Thunderbird and her allies into battle.
Yes, we knew the spirits would not come to our village in these bodies just to give us words of wisdom,
another woman cried out.
Otherwise, why would the Thunderbird bring allies like an underwater panther, a warrior of death, and a bison with such great fangs? Lead us into battle against the sacrificers.
The crowd of women and boys cheered, and a few spears were thrust up into the air.
Thunderbird, strike our enemies dead!
An old woman howled from the back of the crowd.
Fly over their city and rain lightning down on their heads. When the bolts hit their hearts, they'll fry like a fish over a fire.
Another cheer came from the crowd, and Emma glanced at her hands with a speculative frown.
Underwater panther, tear our enemies to shreds with your teeth and fangs.
A younger, shrill voice called out.
Drink their blood, rend their bodies, and keep their souls forever deep in the cold depths of the big lake.
Fila raised a hand to the crowd as if to wave, but her long, curved claws slid out of her fingertips as she splayed her fingers. She lifted one corner of her lip to acknowledge the resulting cheers.
Great warrior of death, lead our charge into battle!
A boy's voice called out.
Show us how the great warriors of the spirit world slay their enemies! Teach us to kill 10 men with one blow!
Another boy yelled.
Teach us battle tactics that will help us defeat the sacrificers with what we have! A deeper voice shouted. Show us how we can get under their armor and slip between their lines!
I was starting to regret that I'd decided to go along with the whole conceit of us being spirits. I just wanted to spend the next 3 days in this world without having to worry about being treated as invaders or having to explain complex scientific concepts to an entire village of people whose understanding of astronomy still involved 2 gods wrestling for dominance. Instead, I'd taken on the responsibilities of a god come to Earth, and those responsibilities included bestowing wisdom, smiting enemies, and righting wrongs. Even worse, I'd saddled Emma and Fila with a huge part of that responsibility without asking them if they were up to it. I just wanted to make life a little easier for all of us for the next 3 days, and now we were supposed to topple an empire. I was pretty sure that I wasn't up to it, even with my Glock. There was no way I could lead this ragtag group of villagers into what I was pretty sure would be certain death against Tupac the Eagle Lord. I had no idea how to tell the villagers that, though.
You fear disappointing the villagers far more than you fear death.
Acrasis's voice echoed inside my head.
Why is that?
We don't have time for introspection right now, I thought at Acrasis. I don't know what to do to help these people. There's no way we can take on an entire army of Aztec warriors by ourselves.
We can always dissolve them. We may need a day to consume enough animal flesh to get us up to fighting weight, but we should be able to secrete sufficient amounts of acid to render the occupying army unable to fight.
Let's save that as a last resort, I thought at Acrasis. I couldn't help but imagine screaming gold-armored Aztec soldiers melting like the Nazis in Raiders of the Lost Ark under Acrasis's gleaming wave of slime.
Why?
Acrasis asked.
It would be the most efficient way to dispatch the occupying army in question. It would likely terrify the sacrificers into leaving them alone, and it would provide me with more than sufficient nutrition for as long as we are here.
It would terrify the crap out of the villagers, which we don't need. I tried to send Acrasis an image of the villagers screaming in terror and running away from her. We don't want to do that. There also might be some villagers in their armies, since they said they conscripted their men, and we don't want to kill off their people along with their enemies. And we also don't want you to get so big that you can't sustain yourself this time.
Those are all valid points,
Acrasis thought. She glanced down at the bowl of meat stew with a perfectly neutral expression on her face as always, but her mind registered a faint hint of disappointment.
It is just that dead flesh does not give off the same hormones as living flesh when it is dissolved.
Are they like a vital nutrient or something? I mentally asked. I knew Acrasis was all about the nutrients.
In trace amounts, yes, but they mostly add to the taste,
Acrasis replied. I tried not to think about how disturbing that was as I contemplated the crowd of villagers. My blood rang in my ears and nearly drowned out the clamor of entreaties from the crowd full of people asking for my help. It was like I was free-falling through space with nothing to hold on to, the cold vacuum stealing the breath from my lungs, but still giddy with the exaltation of weightlessness. I wondered if this was how the Anunnaki who'd landed on Earth and gotten mistaken for gods had felt when they'd been brought their first sacrifices.
"Don't crowd the spirits! Don't crowd the spirits!"
An old man's voice floated through the clamor, and the women and boys parted like the Red Sea to let him through. The man walked nearly hunched over on a leather-wrapped walking stick with feathers hanging from the head, but people shuffled out of his way for yards ahead as he shuffled. His face was lined and wrinkled, and his thin lips were pressed together, but his eyes sparkled like a young man's. He had two long gray braids running down his back, a red scarf wrapped around his head like a turban, and long strings of red and white beads hanging around his neck. His fringed buckskin jacket was embroidered with blue flowers down all over the front and down the sleeves, and they matched the flowers on his moccasins and the triangle beadwork on his fringed pants.
"Grandfather Dave finally woke up,"
Black Turtle whispered behind my head. Grandfather Dave's piercing black eyes traveled from Floppy to Fila to Emma to me. When his eyes met mine, he held my gaze. The old man barely blinked as he looked at me, and after an uneasy few seconds, it started to feel like his eyes were staring right into my soul. Whether or not he actually had any kind of psychic powers, it was easy to see how he could hold an entire village mesmerized.
"Greetings, spirits," the old man finally said.
He held his free hand and bowed his head once. Then he returned to staring me right in the eye.
"I thank you for coming to visit our village. I am Grandfather Day, and I am the one that you have come here to speak with. Come with me to my wigwam, and we can talk in private."
"But, Grandfather, the spirits are here."
A little girl tugged on the hem of the old man's jacket.
"They have come to speak to all of us."
"Yes, but the spirits may have special knowledge that only the shaman may understand."
Grandfather Day looked down at the little girl, patted her on the head, and then went back to drilling his gimlet eyes into me.
"Isn't that right, Dave the Warrior?"
"You know what? Grandfather Day is right." I got up and pulled Acrasis up after me as a wave of relief washed over me. Now, at least I would have time to think of a way to let the villagers down gently about their rebellion that I definitely wasn't going to lead. "We do have some pretty esoteric knowledge we need to drop on the shaman. You guys just keep partying, and we'll catch back up with you all when we're done."
"You should all be heading to the fields anyway,"
one of the poncho-clad grannies squawked. She started to shoo the younger women and a few of the teenage boys further into the village.
"Go, go, or the Eagle Lord's eyes will wonder why everyone is so late. It's still planting season, you know."
"Come with me,"
Grandfather Day gestured at the tree line with his walking stick. Then he started to walk toward the trees.
"It will be faster this way."
The old man led us around the perimeter of the village, where the green, shady trees filtered out most of the sun that was already pretty high in the sky. and I realized as we walked that there wasn't a single tree inside the beaten dirt bounds of the village. He finally stopped at a large single-domed wigwam that was halfway inside the bounds of the village and halfway surrounded by trees, as though the hut had already been there and the village had just grown up around it. The shaman used his walking stick to pry open the birch bark door, and he held it open for us.
"You are not small enough to fit, Floppy."
Fila patted Floppy's trunk as the little mammoth's ears drooped.
"Wait outside and snack on some leaves. Good, Floppy."
The shaman's hut was strewn about with mounds of furs, woven baskets filled with fungi and herbs, and lidded clay pots of every shape and size. The smoldering fire ring in the middle was more like a circular bed of wood and charcoal about a yard wide. Small clay pots were wedged into the glowing red charcoal pieces here and there, and steam emanated from beneath their clay lids. It smelled like a combination of smoke and the herbal supplement section of a Whole Foods.
"Sit where you like."
Grandfather Day leaned his walking stick against the curved wall of the wigwam, slid the lid off of a wicker basket, and then started to rummage through its contents. He turned around, held up a long-stemmed wooden pipe painted with red and white stripes, and started to pack it with curly brown tobacco leaves. The old man touched a twig to the coals, transferred the glowing tip to the pipe, then started to puff on it until smoke curled up from the glowing bowl and the rich scent of tobacco filled the air. He let out a cloud of smoke, then handed the pipe to me.
"Tobacco?"
"Sure, why not?" I hadn't actually smoked since college, when I'd bought the occasional pack of American spirits to take to punk shows, but I figured the knack didn't really go away. I pressed my lips to the end of the pipe, took a couple of shallow puffs, and let the smoke sit in my mouth. I immediately remembered that I hadn't smoked since college, because even organic tobacco, untainted by artificial chemicals from big tobacco companies, tasted fucking awful. So I let the smoke curl up out of my mouth and wished that I'd brought an emergency stick of gum along. I passed the pipe along to Acrasis.
"Puff, puff, pass, honey."
Acrasis put the end of the pipe into her mouth, hollowed out her cheekbones twice, and then pulled the stem away from her lips. It was incredibly obvious that she didn't even try to inhale, and as she passed the pipe along to Emma, it struck me that I couldn't hear Acrasis breathe or see her chest rise and fall. She probably hadn't bothered to give herself lungs.
"Well, I suppose it's all right as long as it's proper for young ladies to use it here."
Emma pressed her lips to the stem of the pipe, puffed in a couple of times, and raised her eyebrows as her sky-blue eyes slammed open. Her petal-pink lips parted to let out a curl of gray smoke as she handed the pipe to Fila.
"It's quite a day for new experiences, isn't it?"
Fila sniffed at the wisp of gray smoke that rose from the glowing bowl. Her ears went back against her scalp, and she handed the pipe back to Grandfather Day. The old man slid the stem of the pipe into his mouth, took a few puffs, and regarded us silently over the bowl. Finally, he slid the stem out of his mouth, held the bowl in his hand like Sherlock Holmes, and raised one eyebrow.
"You're not really our spirits, are you?" the old man asked.